All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
What's going on? I'm Scott from Coding, and we just had a new intro, which threw me off completely. How are you? Nice to see you back here.
No countdown or anything.
Yeah. Sorry we're a few minutes late. I've had a busy morning, and I had to go to the bathroom. So that's the truth.
There you go.
Know, nothing but transparency here. Listen, before we get into our guest, which is going to be a good one, if you're coming over from the live, I appreciate you for actually tuning in. That subscribe button is free. All you have to do is click it.
Exercise those finger muscles a little bit, you know, just whatever you need to do.
We're coming out with a new piece of content on Friday, and in addition to that, we had a piece of content last Friday. You see the theme here? It happens every Friday. We put out a new piece of content, and, you know, podcasts come along as well. So let's get right into it.
Why not?
We already have – we're on location with
– On location.
Going live to Sonoma Raceway. We're on location with Farouk Kawai.
What's up, guys?
What's happening, man?
Oh, you know, it's a beautiful day out here in Sonoma. We're about to do Sonoma drift, so popped up to the top of Turn 7 to show you guys a little view we're experiencing, man. And yeah. What's going on with you?
So, are you guys back at full capacity for events?
We are. Yeah. June 15th. Coronavirus officially ended, right?
That was the elected date for a coronavirus.
No, that was the elected date from Emperor Newsom, and it's you know, we're giving ride-alongs, we're having a blast. It's drag racing and drifting happens at the same time, and everybody was just ready to get back out here.
Yeah,
and so it's been pretty awesome for the past few weeks.
Man, that's crazy. So, What time do you guys do your event?
We start off wind a little bit because I thought it'd be a great idea to show you guys a view and then
coming live from Twister.
Probably have a wind farm up here. So we start off. Gates open at 2:30. We start off at 4. Track goes hot at 4. We're on the road course between 4 and 6.
Yeah.
So people can do fourth gear entries between 4 and 6, and then 7 to 10 we're in the paddock. And the cool thing about that is it's been our, I don't know if you know anything about decibel limits, but this whole program has been grandfathered in because of drag racing for the last 33 years. And we have 114 decibel limit, which is really high. So all those crazy straight pipe VQs can run, which is, you know, that's a, you know, your ears may bleed, but they're legal. Then we also have a donut box between 4 and 9. So any level of drifting can come by and have a blast and crash into a wall and, yeah, have some fun.
Nice. And I'm sure that you guys have plenty of fire suppression equipment that exists just in case. Yeah.
We do. Yeah. It's being at such a big racetrack, the safety is – we're known as having the strictest tech, which is a blessing and a curse at the same time. We've definitely kind of paved the way for a lot of local tech. But it's, you know, you can't have stuff falling off your car. You got to have, you know – anyways, the car has to be a proper car. And
so
it's,
no coffee can oil catch cans.
Actually, coffee can oil catch cans should work as long as it's securely mounted and it's vented properly. You know, I mean, you get creative, Scott. I've seen your fabbing skills. They're looking good.
What I think is sometimes you need to have a Folgers can that has a couple of things on the top and is securely fastened with some Gorilla Tape.
Well, the Gorilla Tape, maybe not.
He's picky.
I like people getting creative. The cool thing is that it's, I mean, drifting is DIY, right? It's all meant to be. There's a huge stop. Did you see that? I just got hit in the face by a bee. That was fun.
Awesome.
But
reporting live from Sonoma.
I'm hoping that Alex can slow it down. We have a good clip for.
Yeah, that was good. it's a great community out here. I mean, you've got everybody from people that build crazy prospect to pro level cars to guys that just, you know, drive their cars to the track every Wednesday. So it's a good mix.
What's up with Donovan? He's still drifting, or is he kind of on hiatus?
So, no, he's definitely drifting. He has been driving what he calls his Beats car, which is this white E30 that he built. Has a California smog legal, like M50 in it, which is, it's amazing that everyone is trying to do this where you create cars that are actually drivable rather than these rocket ships that we've been building for years.
Yeah.
I built one as well, and it's, he drives every Wednesday. I mean, he's out here all the time and just having fun and just getting seat time. So,
yeah, that's cool. And we're talking about Donovan Brockway, by the way. He was a Formula Pro 2 driver. When Pro 2 existed. But so speaking of Formula Drift, how has your departure been? For people that don't know, Farouk was a Formula D Pro 1 driver and made the decision. You sat out the coronavirus year, right?
No, I drove the coronavirus year. I thought that was a great financial decision to drive during coronavirus.
Right.
I sense some sarcasm.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody could argue that drifting is a good financial decision.
No, it's I still have an FD Pro 1 license. We may go back. There's no hiding the fact that I do it when I can afford it. You know what I mean? I have great partners and, you know, the years that I do it are fantastic and fun. And we try our hardest to fight against the big dogs. And then when I can't do it, I just have a lot of fun. I have like genuinely a lot of fun drifting. So
yeah.
This has been one of the, I can't remember the last time I drove this much, in 1 year, and it's been great.
You know, it's funny. It's like when you speak to drivers that have been driving for a long time, especially in a professional aspect, a lot of times it becomes like it takes them so far away from the actual sport that they loved and they grew up doing that it almost just really takes the wind out of their sails, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I know that that was something that you dealt with, just the fact that there's a lot, like, people don't realize driving is probably like 40% of your program.
If that, maybe, yeah. It's, you know, depending on what the program, how you're structured, you know, there are drivers that have been at FD that have driven for larger teams for years. And a lot of those have converted into owning their teams, you know, whether you look at, you know, Vaughn or you look at, you know, Dye. But a lot of the grassroots guys like myself, I mean, you're your own. You organize everything. You figure everything out yourself. You build the car yourself. And then you have to train yourself. And it's an undertaking. And, you know, when I remember several times last year, you know, lining up and I'm like, I've never driven this car. I've never driven this car like this. Let's figure this out. And yeah. It's an interesting thing, you know, with, I'll give you kind of an example of this year with the S13 that I built. We built I call it low horsepower. It's 400 horsepower 2J. Makes exactly 397 to the wheels, and it's a blast. I do tons and tons and tons of laps, and I put two mufflers on it. It's quiet. I actually can run it on Wednesday nights while I run the event because it's so quiet. I can have a radio in the car and dictate people to, you know, what they're doing, and that's the kind of car. I mean, it's brought me back to kind of that joy of driving, and FD is a different joy. FD is an addiction. It's more of like a drug. You know, it's Can you push yourself that hard? Can you? I don't know. Like I'm one of those people that if I, you know, I'm beating my head against the wall and the hole is not forming, I just start hitting harder. And you know, that takes a certain type of person to try to do that. And I don't recommend it for everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, Formula Drift in a nutshell, right there. when your head's not bleeding, just keep smacking.
And this is why he always wears a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, listen, Formula Drift is tough because to run a program, not only do you have the cost and do you have to worry about having staff because – even if, you know, and Farouk was one of those guys that if you were to see him in the pits in between rounds, he'd be working on the car. Not every driver does that. So, I mean, a lot of the drivers that don't have a ton of budget do, but not every driver does. So Farouk was one of those guys that was really working really hard to be able to run a program. When you have to line up against somebody else that their entire job is just to drive, man, that is a tough battle to win, even if you're evenly skilled.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So yeah. It's interesting. So how has it been since our departure from FD? Good, bad, and different? I'm dying
here. Amazing. One of the main reasons I'm not doing FD this year is because I was expecting a beautiful little girl, and she was born a couple weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Whoa, congrats, man.
She's beautiful.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. Luckily, she took all her looks from her mother. We were inspecting the nose earlier. We're pretty sure she's got the mother's nose, so we're good on that.
Right, yeah. Check.
Yep. Nice. So Sabine was born a couple weeks ago, and just doing, fun stuff that I like to do outside of FD, but still with drifting. I did a show with Discovery Channel that's actually debuting on the 19th, which is like Monday after next. And it's called The Getaway, which is, we all want it. We've all played the games, or no one's ever done it in real life, where they've run from the cops. And this is a show which, if anybody wants to see my car with FD destruction, but not an FD, you should definitely watch. It's we get manhandled by some Evoque drivers, great crew, great cast. It was a lot of fun, but it's very intense. Let's put it this way: I don't think anything in my driving career has been calm and cautious. So it's. It goes along with everything else I've done. Let's put it that way.
How much are you not allowed to say about the show?
You sign a bunch of paperwork. You don't read most of it. No. No.
NDA? What's an NDA?
Yeah, right? I'm not going to tell you what happens for, two reasons. One, I don't want to go to jail. And two, I want you guys to watch it because it's fun.
Well, I don't want to know what happens, but can I ask you questions about some things I've heard? Because now there's a lot of people that I know that are on that show. They took a lot of FD drivers. They took a lot of other road race drivers, etc. So I've heard a lot of things from all the people I know on the show.
Yep.
I'll ask you questions. If you feel that they're not answerable, you just take the fifth. We move on. All
right. I'll plead the fifth. All right. There we go.
All right. So – I've heard that there may have been some, let's put it kind, discrepancies in the way it was explained about the rules of engagement and when or how a driver would be pursued in a way that possibly could have led to more destruction than anybody had encountered. True or false?
I'm gonna give you a long-winded answer that's gonna be politically correct because I'm in California. You ready?
I like it. Yeah.
So different people have different perspectives of what is acceptable damage. I'm gonna say that not everybody agrees on their opinions, if that makes sense. Okay. Where the guys that were chasing us are Evoque drivers. They're trained to pit maneuver guys that have probably shot up a small town in Virginia. Right. I had not done that, on the show.
By the way, kids, don't shoot up small towns in Virginia.
Yeah. But they definitely have the pit maneuvers in their toolbox to be able to stop that person.
Right.
That might be considered light rubbing to them. I look at it a different way, but it is what it is at this point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've heard some nasty things about – now, all right, true or false? This will set up the next point.
All right, here we go.
When you go into the show with your car, because you bring your car.
Yep. I thought it was a good idea to bring my FD car. I don't know if that was a good idea.
Right. If you damaged or if you have damage, that's on you.
Yep. That was a short answer, right?
That was a very short answer, which leads me to the fact that I've heard of some people having some significant damage, way more than they ever thought would be possible when the rules were explained to them of the contact that would be accepted or how they would be pursued that led them to be very unsatisfied with the result that they got their car back with, you know, like when they went home.
So I'll give you this, right? So I'm not going to tell you what happened.
Don't.
I'm going to tell you
don't.
What didn't happen. Right. You ready for this?
Yes.
Yeah. So my roof doesn't have any damage on it.
Right. Do you feel that maybe you were expecting a slightly different result from this?
So I'm gonna probably tell this story in a longer format. So but I'll tell you this. On the way there, there was a snowstorm in Texas.
Of course.
Yep. I was going down the 10, which goes down.
Yep.
And I got stuck with no gas available in a snowstorm. I had to go to an emergency relief shelter. And And then my trailer, I got back on the road, trailer slid off the side of the road. Long story short, by the time I got to the show, anything would have been less than what I've already gone through.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So oh my God. Expectations, I don't know, man. A lot of people ask me, like, how do you find this stuff? Both Hyperdrive and this show, they found me. And maybe it's because I'm smart enough to say yes or dumb enough to say yes. You pick your answer. Yeah. I love a good story. And I've done a lot of them in Europe before I moved back to the States in like 2013. My buddies that I ran Drift All-Stars with, we got ourselves stuck in countries and ran drift events where people didn't want us to run drift events. And it's about life experience, man. I think if you don't try things and if you don't do, while being as respectful as you can to other people, if you don't try silly things, you're never going to live life. So,
This is not the first time you've been on a television show with your own car competing in a way that destruction was possible.
Yeah. So it's funny because in Hyperdrive, they actually didn't show all the stuff that went on. But,
right.
You know, it's the commentary for, like, I remember the first run and Hyperdrive. I go through the water area. And they say, oh, he's going slow because there's water on his windshield and he's trying to see and he's trying to do a tactical thing. In fact, I had holes cut in the bottom of my transmission for ventilation so the clutch doesn't overheat. Those are wonderful when you go into water with your throw-out bearing.
Yep.
It expands and seizes. So the clutch was just slipping. And, I ran that whole run from that point on with the slipping clutch.
Yeah,
and it was a fun experience. And looking back on it, we can laugh about it. And it's I'm looking forward to telling Sabine all these stories in 10 years. You know.
Yeah, it's crazy how much being a father changes you and how fast it changes you.
Yeah, everyone was telling me that it's gonna all change when you have a kid. And I was like, whatever. You know, sure, why not? You know, but it does. It's a calming factor that I have trouble putting into words. You know, I have no problem with the gift of gab, but when I try to explain the amount of joy that I get from just looking at that little girl for an hour at a time, it's pretty incredible. And my fiance is a trooper. You know, I try to wake up as much through the middle of the night and change some diapers, but sometimes, like last night, she was punching me, and I stayed in my position. So it's pretty incredible what goes to raise a little one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, like, for me, when I had, my first, it was one of those things where you immediately change in an aspect of your perspective is different, right? Mm-hmm. Like you, everything you saw one way is now seen completely the other. And there's a lot of things that you wanted to do before or you wanted before that now you're not really so concerned with because you feel like I just need to provide and make sure she's okay and everything here at home is okay. And then if I get to do cool things, well, that's like kind of a bonus.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a matter of also paving a way for them that hopefully they can be proud of, you know? I have a very small family, especially, my side. Rebecca's family is quite extensive, but it's interesting, you know, like her last name will definitely, there's not a bunch of them out there. You know, people will know which family she's a part of.
Right.
And it's a tricky thing, you know, the centering thing of like, hey, just making sure that the house is okay. And like that they're being raised the right way and all that stuff. It's definitely humbling. It's very humbling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It also changes the perspective of how you make a living or income or take those financial risks to run an FD season.
Have you been talking to my fiance? What's going on here, bro?
No, but the thing is, I've had these conversations so many times, you know, with my own wife. I understand what they all are. Like, it's you don't have to say it. And now that you're a parent, you'll get to a point where when some other pro-am guy or some guy coming up ends up having a kid or the wife's pregnant, you're going to say, well, you know, listen, get your licks in now because, like it or not, things are going to change, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
You have, in the past 2 years, you've opened up a new shop.
I have, yeah. So I was a partner at SGK Performance,
right?
And back mid FD season, actually in the middle of running the FD 2020 FD season, the partner no longer wanted to do retail stuff. He just wanted to race and have fun with it rather than dealing with the burdens of what was going on. And so we still had a ton of work, and so I opened up my own shop. Still at the racetrack. We've got a smaller space at the racetrack right behind turn 11. And it's been slammed ever since. So in the middle of an FD season, we switched shops. We're dealing with a newfound pregnancy and an engagement. And it's been a pretty wild last 12 months. But,
yeah, they're all good things, man. Like, amazing. Those are all great things. I mean, if you're going to be in a situation where you're going to have a lot of changes – having a baby. He's back.
Yep.
he's like, I can't take this anymore. I'm leaving.
He's like, I've seen this crap before. I don't want to watch any more of it. but like, have a shop, have a baby, get engaged. These are all things that are just super positive to set yourself up. How many do you now solely owning the shop? How many guys do you have there?
We have two full time. Yeah. So we have a couple more part times, but two full time there.
So now with that, you're full fledged running a business all by yourself.
Yep.
Rewarding, still liking it, struggling with it. I mean, it's a tough gig.
It's amazingly rewarding. And our clients are, I guess there's a lot of shops that BS people, you know what I mean? And whether we know exactly how to do something or whether we are still learning how to do something, I'm completely forthcoming with customers with that. And I think that's a breath of fresh air for people, where they're down to have a learning process with somebody rather than assuming that we know everything and then getting surprised in the end. So it's like having a kid when you're already having a kid.
Yeah.
You know, the two guys that are working for me are great. And it's been nice. You know, it at times is daunting. I think the behind the scenes stuff where like the paperwork, the tax stuff, all that stuff, that's probably the hardest thing that I've noticed rather than the day-to-day business stuff. The day-to-day business stuff I seem to be quite good at, making sure that, you know, the circus, you know, I don't know how to say it, but the lights are strung correctly and all that kind of fun stuff are, that's a little bit trickier that I guess I haven't had to do it all on my own before. So that's probably been the most challenging part.
Well, you live in a state that's incredibly complicated for logistical safety, business running, regulation. I mean, we're in New York, so we're not that much better. But I will say, California, it's a toughie. As a business owner, they definitely don't reward you for being a business owner in California.
No, that's not a thing. They're, yeah. You know, it's funny because in Poland in the early 2000s or early to mid 2000s, they were giving money for people to start small businesses. In Europe, they were. And a lot of my buddies that had drift shops in Poland got small grants from the EU to start their own businesses. And it's, you know, you compare that with what we're going through here, and it's night and day, you know, with the amount of hurdles they have to jump through. And just luckily, very, very luckily, I'm at the racetrack, which also helps in many, many ways.
Oh, yeah.
As far as
noises and a whole bunch of different aspects. Yeah.
Plus being around like-minded folk. Yeah. Noise is one thing, but, you know, if there's, if you're pulling in a trailer, no one's complaining at you. You know, it's a really, really nice community here, especially since you have, you know, machine shops and other shops around that are super helpful. So,
yeah, that's fantastic.
I mean, and what an environment. Like,
oh, I know.
He was showing me a little bit of the track before we actually went live.
Yeah.
I mean, what a background, man.
I know.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, so I wonder if you guys can see. I'm going to turn around a little bit. And in the background, we actually have, like, there's vineyards and that kind of stuff with Sonoma Raceway. So I've been telling Scott, man, Winter Jam is the event that we do the weekend before Christmas every year for Sonoma Drift. And it's, you know, 350 cars, 5,000 spectators. It's just the best drifting festival that you can find, I think, on this side of the country.
Yeah.
And it's you got to come out, man. Bring the ladies.
I want to.
Yeah. Right there.
I want to, man. I think you know what? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this year shapes out. But I would really like to get out there, not only for Winter Jam, but I think it would be fantastic. I've never been to NorCal at all.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I always get stuck in that let's not go there. but yeah, I would love to get up to NorCal, especially Sonoma. Man, that's a great view.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And the weather, you guys caught it on a really good day. I mean, it's generally pretty good, but this is exceptional.
So what's next, Farouk? You've done the whole shop thing. You're having you had a baby. You're getting married. You're doing all the big boy stuff. What's next?
Honestly, just kind of taking the business to the next level. Really, I do want to foster more drivers and kind of help people out as much as possible. There's this huge disconnect between, you know, understanding. A friend of mine posted recently where he said he misses forums. You know what I mean? He was saying that, Facebook groups are tricky because, you know, there's not like the search etiquette that there used to be. And it's like having a place for a young drifter to go that kind of has a sounding board for ideas, or a young track guy can go that has a sounding board for ideas. And, you know, whether we learn it together or whether we already have done it and we can teach somebody how to do it. Like, I just like being that place that's hopefully can help get people on track. You know, Sonoma Drift as a program, we have 70 cars that come out for 25 weeks a year on Wednesday nights. That's a lot of people that come out.
It's crazy.
And it's having three different levels of courses kind of fitting anybody's driving style and driving ability is I'm pretty proud of it. I'm glad we're able to do that. And I hope that I can do a similar thing with the shop. I think that's the next big step. Being, you know, I don't know, FD, honestly, it's back to that, you know, whole brick wall scenario. I would love to go back. I would love to go back, and I hope to go back next year. But that is if everything makes sense, and we'll see. We'll see what the future brings. The FD car, besides all the you'll watch the show, see what happened. We're fixing it now.
Aside from upgrades, we're gonna call them upgrades because any damage is an opportunity to improve upon a situation.
Yeah, we're gonna bring the car to the roof level. You know, just make it all.
Yeah, it's just gonna be a bars, like the cage and a roof.
It's gonna be a hovercraft.
Yeah.
But no, it'd be fun to go back. The street car is phenomenal. I did Drift Week earlier this year, and that was, I mean, it's a little bit funky. You know what I mean? Some of the stuff behind the scenes, but in general, the amount of driving has been just incredible. You know, I drive the car. I do a set of tires every Wednesday, and it's fun to just drive and get back to the craft of driving rather than getting back to the, you know, like FD is, you're harnessing a rocket ship. You're essentially trying to keep this thing from killing itself in you. And it's nice to just be able to wheel, you know, get behind the wheel and just be able to truly enjoy driving. So I don't know what next year or what the future will really hold, and I'm kind of open to all the options, but it's pretty fun so far.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, just as a side note, I mean, the 240 looks awesome. Yeah. Like,
thanks,
I haven't seen very many hyperchrome countergrams, definitely on an S13, but, like, that car is definitely pulling it off. I think it looks awesome.
Right on, man. I appreciate that. So. Yeah, it's that honestly, that it's pretty wild that you guys make a 18 by 11 plus 15 wheel. Like, that's a pretty gangster offset right there and size, you know? Like, it's,
well, listen, if you thought that was interesting, you ain't seen nothing yet. Stay tuned.
You heard it first.
Yeah, they're cool, man. So, what's going? Are you released? Did you already release something, or are you guys going to release something soon?
Yeah, but this is probably at SEMA time. We have a whole bunch of stuff that's dropping, but yeah, we have something in the works for some people that have been requesting it. So we'll see.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like your show. You can't talk about it. We're like,
yeah,
hey,
right?
You know, can't really.
There you go.
About it.
I like it.
Just to play off the forum thing for a second, do you think that the YouTube situation sort of helps fill the forum void in terms of how-tos and whatnot?
It can. But then you go into the comment section of YouTube videos, and then you're dealing with the same thing as a you're dealing with the same thing as you deal with on Facebook groups. You know what I mean? So it's tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a lot of good content. There's a lot of good tutorials on YouTube. I think that's probably the best kind of lead, like you said, the best leading front as far as tech information goes. But having that kind of intelligent sounding board where you can, like, debate ideas in a public forum, it's tricky these days. It's tricky to find a source for that.
The interaction isn't there the same. Like, yep. It's one-sided content. You can watch a how-to and learn something. But when you have to challenge, I'll give you a good example. And this is, like, you know, probably nowhere near where anybody thought we were going.
Oh, boy.
Well, Farouk, we would expect nothing less. I don't know what you
It's going to be something having to do with welding.
No.
Catching on fire.
It's a sidestep from welding. But so I wanted to put an oil catch can in my car.
Right.
So I made one with my welding, but I had to end up redoing, because I wanted to keep a PCV system, because you know, whatever. So I ended up having to, like, redo everything. So I used grabbed a radium PCV, and that usually is for an integrated can, and I had to, like, make it work with mine, and had it move over to the other side. You know, it's got to be after the catch can, or else it doesn't do anything. So anyhow, what I'm saying is that there's a lot of things when you start playing with things. If you don't understand the concept, you know, if you didn't know the difference, not having the ability to log into a forum and say, hey, what happens if I move the PCV valve over here? Like, you don't have that feedback from somebody that knows. You got to guess.
Yep.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. It's we'll see what happens in the automotive industry in the next 10 years. I mean, that you're kind of harping on a fact that also goes back to, there's people aren't really being trained as mechanics anymore. That's the amount of DIY people that we have is amazing, but having that kind of classically trained mechanic that, you know, knows how to read the burn on a spark plug, stuff like that. It's like, it's getting to be a lost art.
No, it's 100% true. I mean, what we're talking about here is the difference between being able to assemble, build, put together, and diagnose. See, like, no one, you lost that art of diagnostics, and that's what really lacks. And that's why when you go to an automotive repair shop, and they hand you this lofty bill, and at the end of the day, it was really just something as simple as a clogged cat. But they changed every oxygen sensor in the car. They changed, you know, fuel injectors. They changed, I mean, you know, it's because they were guessing. They're like, oh, we'll just change everything.
Yep.
So
just throw parts at it. Yep.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think the next, I think the next 5 years are going to be really volatile for the automotive industry between the RPM Act fight that's going on with, you know, with SEMA and the EPA. I think that with technology changing and EV becoming more prominent and what looks to be the EPA essentially wanting to make the internal combustion engine a relic, you know, just push it down the pike. I think that there's a lot of fighting and to do, and it's sad for automotive enthusiasts, but you know, adapt, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, adapt is one of the key words there. I think a lot of people aren't looking for solutions. They're either fighting the law and not trying to find a way around it or a way through it.
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, like we're building right now, we're building an E30 with an F20 in it, which is a S2000 motor. And, you know, we're trying to make that thing CARB legal. My S13, actually, we have the stock USDM turbos for it. We ported the back of the head for the EGR system, and we're going to try to get that CARB legalized as well. And if, you know, if people create more constrictive rules, you can play by them.
Yeah.
And, you know, until they pretty much tell us that we can't have, we absolutely can't have internal combustion engines, I think we just have to get a little bit more creative with it.
No, I agree with that. But I'll tell you, I'll take that sentiment one step further. I think the idea of putting regulation or restriction on something isn't really the problem because, like you said, you can make systems function and function well. I'll even go one, but here's where my big disconnect, and maybe you'll appreciate, maybe we're getting too far off topic, but when you put in, the EPA is fighting against something that they don't have any knowledge of what they're fighting against. When you say to someone you can't put an aftermarket ECU in a car because of the threat it poses to the environment,
That's
ridiculous. Because let me tell you something. You can make a car way more efficient with the better technology that exists on an early 90s, late 80s, even early 2000 car with a control that we now have and the technology that's available in a standalone ECU versus the car the way it originally came.
I'll give you an example that I've dealt with recently. So we, in our E30 project, we're doing this with Ineos Oil, and we were coming up with fun JDM engine options, right? Because Ineos is a Japanese oil company, and we're putting it into a German car. So we're looking for a JDM heart to put into it, and we were going to do the K24.
Yep.
I call the referee. I have 2 1-hour-long conversations with the referee about what's called an engine change law that's dictated by the BAR, which is the Bureau of Automotive Repair. They say that you can actually change intake and exhaust manifolds as long as the functionality didn't change, right? Which that's very, very reasonable, right?
Right.
So on the rep, you know, because intake and air flow, you know, it all makes sense. Sure. If your car, the E30 essentially has to then become smog-wise a TSX, has to have the exhaust gases and functionality smog-wise of a TSX.
Right.
So I'm talking to the referee, and I say, hey, all I need to do is I need to cut a slit in the cat or right before the cat and turn it so that I can get the cat to face the right direction. Otherwise, the cat ends up in the left wheel, left front wheel. And the minute you cut it and turn it, it becomes illegal. And I'm like, okay, so the law actually doesn't say that. You're either not reading the law or you don't know what functionality means. And we go back and forth on this, and he's like, if you touch it, it's illegal. And I'm like, well, it's not true. I don't know how to tell you that I don't want to tell you your job, but I'm telling you your job. And we go back and forth and back and forth. And in the end, we ended up putting an F20 in because I really wanted it to do the swap from transverse to longitudinal. And they pretty much made it impossible for no reason other than they are not trained on the law. And they don't actually understand the reasoning of the law. So hopefully that referee's not listening to this podcast and he passes my F20. but it's a tricky world we're living in, and unfortunately that there's no incentive for the people on the EPA side to be trained as to, like what you said, like, can an aftermarket ECU, as long as you pass the sniffer, and like, why is that illegal? That doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? That actually, as long as you can have, just like you have smog referees, you can have tuners that will do carb legal tunes and lock them, you know what I mean, so that they're not being tampered with, and you could have really clean cars running around. But that's nobody's prerogative at the moment.
I know, it's like, make these shops register with EPA. Make these shops basically say, like, take some certification so that the EPA certifies them in knowing what they should manipulate and what they can't. And when these shops now are certified, people can go to these shops to have their cars modified in a way that they will still be able to pass, right? Yep. We're not saying let's do away with emissions, and that's the problem. Yeah. They're saying, look, you guys are changing this to destroy the environment. No. We're changing it to get power out of the car. You give us a new set of rules that we need to comply with that are reasonable, we'll do it.
Yeah, and that's another thing that a lot of car guys don't understand too, is that, I mean, emissions laws do serve a purpose. You know, right. I mean, like 40 years ago, there were smog days. People can breathe outside. Mm-hmm. And there's definite effects to having clean cars in a highly populated area. You know, I understand that if you live in the middle of nowhere, it might not make much of a difference. But when you live around another bunch of people and everyone's commuting to work, and it becomes, you know, everyone's deleting their diesels, you know, the economy of scale doesn't favor people breathing. So it's, yeah, I think we're on the same page, where I wish that there was somebody in the government that actually wanted to do something constructive and keep blue collar jobs around and keep shops like mine just pushing forward. But it doesn't seem to be anybody's prerogative at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like Adam Miller just commented and he said, hey, it's all about money, not the environment. And that's fairly accurate. I just think that you shouldn't make principals from people that have never been teachers. You shouldn't make hospital administrators from people that have never been doctors. You can't make people part of the EPA that are going to oversee a segment as large as automotive and not have them have automotive experience to the extent at which they're governing.
Yep. There's a shop at the racetrack, you know, that it's called Works Motorsports. I used to work there before SGK and before my shop. They have designed and carb legalized a smog legal turbo kit for a BRZ. They played the game.
Yeah.
The car makes, you know, a lot more horsepower and is fantastic at driving what the BRZ actually should have been from the factory. And it's, you know, that's how you play the game. And that's why is that not more readily known that can be done? You know what I mean?
Right.
You talk to a lot of tuners and a lot of kids that want to modify the cars. They don't even know, you know, they don't know that that's an option. And there is not the education. And unfortunately, the burden is placed on people like us, the enthusiasts.
Right. But to fight against people that also don't know the interpretation that was in where the intent was. So they're fighting against the way a law is written versus how it's interpreted by one person. There is no black and white. You have all these people that are just making a judgment call, and their entire job, you know, is overseen by their opinion, and that isn't fair.
Absolutely. And
it's
they
sliding goalposts.
Hopefully at some point some SEMA representatives can actually make their way into the EPA, because I think that is the only solution, is to have some people with some actual automotive clout and history start governing.
Yeah.
You know? But we'll see what actually happens.
Man, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to hang out.
I love
it's
you
always
guys,
good talking
to you. Thank you for having a chat.
Yeah. So, and just to remind people, Monday night, July 19th, that's when they need to go check out Getaway Driver?
That's episode one. Getaway Driver. So Michelle Rodriguez from the Fast and the Furious, she's the host.
Yeah.
And the first episode is on July 19th. My episode is in August. I'm on episode 7. So if you want to see me,
Watch. That Monday night in August.
Watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we
should have a watch party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's do it. Seriously. So, Farouk, before we go, you can level with us. Did you get a hug from Michelle Rodriguez?
The funny thing is that I am, like, the opposite of a celebrity, yeah. like, whatever you call them. Right. And they said, oh, yeah, Michelle Rodriguez is the host. And it took me a second. I was like,
who?
I don't know if I know. I don't know who that is. And then I saw her. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, okay, now that makes sense.
Right.
But they were so, yeah. It's, I mean, she's a sweetheart. And it's nice that she's such an enthusiast.
Right.
Yeah. So my car made 935 to the wheels.
Right.
And we were on gravel. I'm just going to put that out there.
Wait, so the question is, who was behind you?
Yeah. Well,
Ken Block.
Yeah. Just watch the show. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but real quick before we go, you didn't answer my question. Did you get a hug?
No.
Okay. All right. All right. Listen, yeah. Congratulations on the baby. I hope that
thank you very much.
I hope hopefully in a few months I can get out there and meet the baby in person. That would be fun.
I'd love that. That would be amazing. I don't know if my fiance will let me bring her to SEMA, but I'll see you guys.
No, yeah, don't bring her to SEMA. I don't want to go to SEMA. Like, don't bring her to SEMA, but
oh my God.
Maybe we'll get out to Winter Jam and then we can come meet the baby.
The SEMA car, right?
That's right. All right, man. We'll catch up with you later. Thanks for doing it.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
So that was it, man. I mean, listen, I think hanging out with Farouk is always a good time. And I think that I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I did. I did too.
I think we covered a lot of different topics that we didn't think we would go through. And I think that the other thing about it is that there's a lot of good information in there. We kind of touched on a bunch of stuff. So, so that's cool. I would like to get out to Hyperfest.
Winter Jam.
Sorry,
I already butchered
wrong
the
one. No. Winter Jam is such a cool event that they run up in Sonoma, and Farouk has been really behind it for so many years, and they bring a lot of drift cars out. It's a huge spectator. They have the facility for it, and the best part about all of it is that this event has just gotten bigger and bigger, and it's a great event, and I hope to get up there. I've never really been up to NorCal besides sitting in an airport. I've done layovers there. You know what I mean?
That's
anyhow,
unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. So that's the plan. Maybe this year we'll be up in Sonoma right around Christmas time. I think it's a bad time to go, but I venture to say that we may try. So that's it. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. Make sure you click that like button and subscribe button. We're counting on you. We need it. Let's do it. And stay tuned for some more giveaway information that could be coming in only weeks, I believe. But if you're not subscribed, you won't know. You won't know. So that's it. We will catch you back here next Wednesday. Make sure you check out the piece of content we're dropping on Friday. Take care of yourself. We'll catch you next week.